The American writer Gia Tolentino has been described as the voice of her generation, the best young essayist in the world, and the Joan Didion of our times. She's a staff writer at The New Yorker magazine. She's just published her debut collection of essays, Trick Mirror. It's created quite the buzz in the internet, in international literary circles. Adele Coffey has been reading Trick Mirror for us, and she joins us now from our Galway studio. Very broad range of topics, it has to be said, in this particular collection of essays, Adele. But tell us me a little bit, first of all, about Gia Tolentino. Very young, and her background, her early life, in fact, is quite fascinating. The family she grew up in, the community she grew up in.
Yes, and actually quite surprising as well, because you'd never guess it from the kind of... She's a very kind of cool, young American woman, very normal seeming, and she grew up in what she calls the Repentagon, which was this mega church in Texas. She went to school there, she went to church there, there were like 6,000 people in the congregation.
It was a big Baptist community, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, massive. Mm. And that kind of informed her early life, right up until she went to college. She was in that community. Although she did kind of start, like a lot of young people who go to mass, even in our culture, you know, by the time they're 15, they're thinking, how can I bunk off this? And she kind of did that as well in her time. But she said her life was very much the church. Her parents came from Canada to Texas. They moved there. They found that there was a really good school in this church. And that seems to be like the kind of main reason they got involved in the church.
Yeah, because what's interesting is, despite the fact that this was a church where dogma was very strict and in many ways a very literal interpretation of the Bible, her parents were quite liberal in how they trained her, or encouraged her, maybe is a better word, to think and to explore things.
Absolutely. And the first chapter, or the first essay in this book, is about, the first essay is about her involvement, her beginnings with the internet. Mm. But there's another essay on, it's called Reality TV Me, where she was 16 and she was in the mall with her parents one weekend, and she came across this casting agents for this reality TV show, which was done in Puerto Rico, and it was kind of like just boys versus girls. It was, you know, early days in the reality TV format. But her parents kind of encouraged her to do it. Her dad said, I'll give you $20 if you audition. And she got on the show, and that kind of leads into an essay about reality TV and its beginnings and where it's led. But yes, they clearly weren't kind of hardcore religious. They weren't in any way right-wing or conservative, it seems. And even the church itself had lots of conflicts, and, you know, there was a cheerleading team where they wore barely anything, you know, as most cheerleaders do. And she said some weeknights she went to youth club or Bible study, and other nights she was out in the nightclub, you know. Yeah. So it was normal enough, it seemed.
Yeah, and it very particularly impressive was how involved she was with the internet. She talks about kind of web 1.0. There's a quote in that first essay that you spoke about, the eye in the internet. In 1999, it felt different to spend all day on the internet. She was on the internet all day, but boy, was she productive when she was on the internet in 1999.
We were all on the internet all day because it took that long to connect back then, John. But yeah, she was, you know, it was funny to read about it back then, or about that sort of retrospectively, because she's talking about she had set up her little GeoCities webpage and then moved on to Angel Fire. And she was writing blogs every day as a 10-year-old girl, and she was interacting with strangers. She was having the chats, and obviously it all seemed like a much sort of nicer, safer place back then. You know, if you heard of some 10-year-old freely going on the internet now, chatting with people, messaging, all that stuff, obviously it sounds like your basic nightmare. But back then it wasn't, and she's kind of making that point with, you know, it just started off as this fun, innocent thing, and now
she talks about
are.
Yeah, literally like communities of people finding each other on the internet and supporting each other rather than tearing each other down, which
Precisely.
Might be the thought now. She's very interesting on social media, and it's a topic that comes back time and time again in different essays in the book. But the big thing that she talks about is how personhood has become a commodity.
A commodity, yeah. You know, she says 10 years ago, Facebook was this new product, and now we are the product. And that's something we've heard over and over again. That's nothing new. But how she writes about the internet really sort of unites this entire book. And the internet, because she grew up on it, because she is a millennial, because she has lived her whole life through it, and her life is kind of inextricable from it, she has this understanding of it that is both innate and yet she seems to have an objective understanding of it. She's brilliant on the commodification of personhood, particularly in, say, chapters like Always Be Optimizing, where she's talking about the sort of commodification of feminism. So if you want to be a feminist, if you want to be a good feminist now, you have to go to bar class, which is one of the most horrific exercises classes you can do. Like Gwyneth Paltrow would do it, let's say. It's that level. And she's describing it, you know, you have to wear the $90 yoga pants. You know, you can't just wear the $5 yoga pants. Mm. You know, it's all about being a type of woman. And she describes it as, she's writing about this intersection between capitalism and feminism, and she's describing it as, you know, this kind of point at which you just, you're training yourself for an endurance test. You're training yourself so that you can survive a 12-hour day in the office. You're training yourself so that you can eat your salad in 5 minutes and answer your work emails and get back to the office before anyone notices you're gone. And when you're reading it, you're kind of realizing, yes, this kind of is what it is to be alive and a unit of production in late stage capitalism.
That's the frightening word within everything you've just said there, a unit of production.
Yeah.
Because she kind of, it's quite a bleak outlook in some ways. Is there hope within that, you know, that somehow everybody has become a unit of production? They're monetized on the internet as themselves. Their personhood is the commodity. Is there a way out of this?
You know, I don't know if there is. And it's interesting to read because it is her writing style. Okay, I think it comes from her experience as a journalist who started online. She worked at Jezebel. She was a deputy editor there. That was a kind of, started off as a niche feminist website, became this huge conglomerate almost website. She worked at Gawker, and she has this style that is internet oriented, which is, you know, keep the reader entertained, keep them on her page. You don't want them to click on any of the number of options they have. So it's very sort of engaging, it's very entertaining, and it feels quite light, but actually it's full of depth. It's really profound. She's describing a society that, you know, it's almost too late. It's beyond help. She's describing a nightmarish scenario, and it is quite bleak. But it's not depressing. You know, you all she's saying is, this is the circumstance that we're in. She's not really offering solutions. And she's saying she does fantasize about getting out. There's a point in one of the essays where she says, you know, for me, the fantasy is I'll become successful enough that I will break free. I'll be able to stop selling my personhood and just be a person. And that's a point made time and time again through reality TV or social media, where we're all just representing, or we're actors in our own lives. We're pretending to be a version of us instead of just being us.
Yeah, and the other thing that she speaks about is the internet's unhealthy focus on opinion. That and this is all driven by money all the time, but that opinion is all very good and well, but in fact, let's not lose the point that action is actually more important than saying what you think about something, actually doing something about it.
Yeah, and she says there's a cycle there, which is, you know, you're reading about, one minute you're reading about a girl in Aleppo who's 7 years old and she's tweeting about being scared of dying, and the next you're reading about some guy who's tweeting at a, you know, an airplane company because they've lost his luggage. And she says nothing is kind of rated, everything is equal importance, and you go through this cycle of just feeling numbed.
Yeah.
And then activated and then paralysed, and so you achieve nothing.
One of the essays I think that particularly spoke to you was an essay called The Story of a Generation in Seven Scams. She basically is saying here that the millennial generation has been given a group of scam merchants as their role models.
To me, this essay is evidence of her really superior quality as a thinker and as a writer. And it's no surprise that The New Yorker picked her up as a staff writer. This essay is what this book is all about. It's about the confluence of the internet, capitalism, feminism, and millennials. And it's her talking about people her age who have grown up. What sort of culture have they grown up in? They've arrived on the scene when we've got like the worst economic crisis in the history, in our memory, since the Great Depression. Okay, the worst economic crisis. You've got the subprime crisis, which was, if you think about it, it's so bleak. You can't even think about it. You've got the student loan crisis in America.
She starts with the Fire Festival, doesn't she?
And the Fire Festival. This guy, Billy McFarland, who just decided, I'm going to do this luxury festival. I'm going to make a load of money. I'm going to charge hundreds of thousands of dollars, and It was supposed to be a luxury festival in the Bahamas, and people may know the Netflix documentary on it, which is riveting. But it ended up being this kind of nightmarish scenario where you had all these people on this island, and there were like hurricane shelters, there was no food, there were no toilets, there were no basic facilities, and it was a nightmare. But she's brilliant on this, and there's one line that's really good in it where she says, she's talking about, you know, everyone, because they were all millennials at the festival, they were all tweeting their agony at the site, and she said, the internet snorted each dispatch from Great Eczema like a line of medical grade Schadenfreude. Yeah. And it says so much about how we use the internet as well. It's like FOMO, and we're so delighted we're not there, and aren't they awful fools for being there? Yeah. And at the same time, we use it as a way of gaining information about this live setting. But this essay is 40 pages long. It's so incredible. It goes from Donald Trump, it goes from Fire Festival, it goes to the student loan crisis, it talks about Amazon and how they have changed the economy, it talks about Facebook. Actually, a really interesting point about Amazon, she was talking about how many shops have closed down in America, and it keeps rising, and it's now higher than it was at the peak, or the nadir, I should say, of the American economic crisis. So shops are shutting down in America, and she's kind of saying it's to do with online shopping. But there was a detail about Amazon, the workers in the warehouse who package your stuff so that it can get to you in one day or 3 days. They wear a little sort of activator thing or an alert. It's an electronic thing that if they are going too slow, it buzzes them.
Yeah, cattle prod.
Walk faster. Yeah. Pack faster. Yeah. And all this is hidden behind the screen, obviously.
Is she the Joan Didion of our times?
I can see why she's been described as that, and it's because she has this brilliant ability to have this clear insight into our culture and to describe it and to communicate it to us in the way that most of us only see in retrospect. Like, she is gifted. She, if you're coming to this book looking for Joan Didion's style, for that really cool, pristine, bare, slightly cruel style, you will not find it here. She, as I said, she's a product of her generation. She's a product of the internet. She has a really almost hyperactive, very entertaining style. Right. She reminds me a bit of those people who are like the cleverest people in the school, but they were pretending to be dumb and, and they were jokers, but they were still getting A1s.
All right.
So it's kind of more that style, but she's a brilliant thinker and a brilliant observer of culture.
All right. That's Adele Coffey there speaking to us about Gia Tolentino's collection of essays, Trick Mirror, with the subtitle Reflections on Self-Delusion. It's published by Fourth Estate.